What differentiates it from other such loves is much more than the exclusion of carnal relations, it is that rare quality which is the very perfection of conjugal love, a scrupulous desire not to take even the slightest place apportioned to the Lord in the other's heart, an anxious concern to offer the loved one a motive to praise and seek God always more perfectly. Joseph and Mary are only married to aid each other to perfect virginity. Was the Annunciation and the visit to Elizabeth after Mary entered the house of Joseph? Exegetes are divided on the question. But what does it matter? One thing is certain: Joseph and Mary were already engaged when Mary received the visit of the angel, and the Jewish engagement was equivalent to marriage, with the exclusion of cohabitation. For want of knowledge, some hazard a contrary meaning: Mary had first conceived Jesus and only after that had wed Joseph to cover up everything. This is a grave misunderstanding because it reduces Joseph to a role of chaperone and makes the marriage of Joseph and Mary a pious mystification. The reality is so much richer: it is to their union, to their love, at the same time virginal and conjugal, that the Father gives his Son. Can we go so far as to say that Joseph is the father of Jesus? A reflection on paternity will tell us. Human paternity, precisely because it is human, is not only an affair of the body but first and foremost an affair of the heart, of free consent. Thus the man who adopts a child truly has the right to the title of father. It is quite different from a legal fiction. For Joseph is much more than an adoptive father to Jesus. Jesus is given to the marriage of Joseph and Mary, he is in some manner the fruit of their virginal union. It should be noted also that Mary, the resting place of the hidden treasure, is concerned with Joseph. There are many reasons to indicate the paternity of Joseph and give him his unique character. Mary herself will proclaim this paternity the day that she finds her son in the temple. "Your father and I have sought you, sorrowing." Jesus is the center, the love not of their love. They only love each other well in a third person, writes Kierkegaard. This will never be as true as in the family of Nazareth. They are given to each other only in order to better give themselves together. But let us distrust sweet images. The presence of Jesus amongst them is at once their great joy and a merciless question asked of their faith. Truly they cannot see that their child is the Son of God. They believe it, with a faith often subjected to severe trials. Think of the birth in a stable, the exile, or the loss of Jesus for 3 days. To help one another believe was one of the forms of their love. All Mary's maternal instincts are expressed in relation to her son. Humble, yet without a shadow of false humility, this little Jewess who has renounced her maternity dared to believe that the child in her arms is the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. She dares to call God Almighty my Son, and the day comes when he by whom all things have been made and without whom nothing that was made, calls her my mother. The love of God has its divine revelation and Mary adores. Those who saw them together in the little house at Nazareth are struck by the resemblance of the young boy and his mother. Was it not from her and her alone that he had received his humanity? And it was not only his face but his interior life which is allied to Mary's. His intelligence and his heart are awakened in response to his mother. The voice that had lullabied him and the love which had nourished him, the beauty which had gladdened his eyes and quickened his heart, all the subtle structures of his psychological life, he receives from Mary. Yet for all that, I do not underestimate the influence of Joseph. I have always wondered at the touching manner of Jesus when he speaks of the fathers of the earth. A man had two sons. If you, evil as you are, give good things to your children, is not explained by the memory of that silent and vigilant father who looked after him in those early years. Then one day Joseph died, almost as though he wished to remove himself, to leave Mary alone with Jesus, as though he wished the symbol to give place to reality. The union of Joseph and Mary, as all marriages, was truly a sign, the image of the union of God and his people, of Christ and the Church. Joseph gone, Mary is in the presence of Jesus, It is Israel in the presence of Yahweh. It is the church in the presence of Christ. Mary and Jesus. The circumstances of Joseph's disappearance are unknown. This intervention of death was a poignant moment in the life of these three persons so strongly bound by love. For sanctity never renders the heart insensible. The evangelist speaks to us of the tears of Christ before the tomb of Lazarus. At the death of Joseph there was great sorrow in the house of Nazareth. And a great change. Jesus took over the paternal direction of the household. One would have to be a mother to describe Mary's contemplation of her now adult son, and the new expression her love for him took. For maternal love changes throughout the years. It passes imperceptibly from one nuance to another, as the sky at dawn. One phase of this evolution is precious above all others in the eyes of mothers, the phase of friendship. Moreover, it seems that few know how to keep the confidence of their sons until this time, and those who live to see this are cherish it. It is an ephemeral time, a climax in the history of their relation. Their sons soon must leave them to cling to their wives. Jesus will not leave his mother. When we imagine the friendship between them, we marvel at it, and it defies description. The friendship will evolve toward a still more profound union, toward a total communion of life and destiny, in the material order, yes, but above all in the spiritual order. Mary is of the race of those who see God, of which the Psalms speak. In her faith is an insatiable hunger for knowledge of the Lord. We can be certain that her son did not deny her the bread for which she hungered. He is this bread. It is in giving himself that he is satisfied. And to give oneself first of all means to tell one's secret thoughts. If Jesus confided to his disciples, "I do not call you my servants but my friends, because I have told you all that I have learned from my Father," would he not first have revealed everything to her who is his most avid and receptive disciple? Would he not have spoken of his Father to his mother? Mary listens attentively to the Son who has become her teacher, and she keeps all these things in her heart. Doubtless she was struck by the awesome tone with which Jesus spoke of the Father, the tone that amazes us even in reading the Gospels. She let herself be introduced always further into the love her Son had for the Father. She associated herself always more perfectly with his praise, with his prayer, with his impatient desire for the glory of the Father. The secret of the strength of their intimate union must be found in their common love of the Father and in their will that his kingdom come. The Father is the first subject of their talks. It is he who is present between them in the silences which consummate the union of their hearts. Between Mary and Jesus that frustrated dream of human love is realized. They are one. Not only in the sense that they live together under the same roof, that they love and pray together, that between them sorrows and joys are common, but in that stronger sense that they are open completely to one another interiorly. I remember having heard a friend speak of his wife. "She is more and more interior to me." Human love is a foretaste of the divine identification in love. Mary is interior to Jesus. Jesus is interior to Mary. Understand what that means? He communicates his life superabundantly, that mysterious divine life which bums in him under the veil of the flesh. But it is impossible to imagine that divine life in Mary which makes all her grandeur, unless perhaps we begin with the experience of the great mystics. The soul is full of the rays of divinity and completely transformed in its creator. God supermaturely communicates his being to it. By that participation the soul seems to be more God than itself, even though it keeps its being and is distinct from the divine being, as the glass is distinct from the ray which illuminates its saint. John of the Cross, Ascent of Carmel, Book 2, ch. 5. Various terms have been proposed to designate this union of Mary and Jesus: companion, associate, spouse. They are deceptive. But how could it be otherwise? How could a term borrowed from a usual relation suit this unique relation? Perhaps that of spouse would be at the same time the most unlikely and yet the least imperfect. The liturgy gives this title of Spouse of Christ to every consecrated virgin, the Bible gives it to the Church. Doesn't it best suit her who is the model of virgins and the figure of the Church? But one must see what is essential in the married relationship. The exclusive and definitive gift of love of two persons to each other in an unbreakable union. Doubtless Mary has no other ambition than to be the servant, but Jesus wishes her to be spouse and queen. She has given everything to him, he gives himself and all that he has. But not primarily for the joy of Mary was Jesus made man, but for the salvation of men. The life of Mary side by side in the small house was good for a time, a long time to be sure, in proportion to the duration of the life of Jesus. The day came, however, when the carpenter refused further commissions, arranged everything in the shop, and took leave of Mary. From the threshold she watched him who was her whole life walk away and disappear at the turn of the road. We should not be fooled by appearances here, for the separation was only exterior. Mary is no more absent from the acts of Jesus than she is from his inner life. Saint John suggests it very well when he shows her at his side at the beginning and at the end of his apostolic mission, from Cana to Calvary. Note that at the marriage feast a mysterious allusion is made to the rendezvous at the cross, my hour has not yet come. Mary knows what he means. She has heard of this hour of the life of Jesus, she knows that he counts on her, that he will need her. He does not mean to do without her to accomplish his mission any more than he did without her to be bomb. If it is true that for the spouse there is no greater happiness than to serve, then there is no greater unhappiness than to be unnecessary. We find Mary, then, present and waiting on Calvary. And it is not only her body but her soul which is there. And she is not found at the side of the sacrifice but perfectly associated with that sacrifice. In the yes of the Annunciation she had consented not only to the birth but also to the whole mission of Jesus, and therefore, implicitly, to the cross. The hour has come to renew that consent with full knowledge of the matter, to offer on Calvary him whom she had received in her arms at Bethlehem, to hold out to the Father at arm's length him who is her flesh and blood. She knows the significance of everything that happens and while the apostles, men of little faith, fled, she believed. Once more she was faithful to the divine plan with all her grief-torn heart. She knows that she is the first one saved by the blood of her Son, that all the graces which she received because of that hour. She knows that an immense people of the children of God are bomb and that these children are hers because it has pleased Jesus to associate her with the sacrifice, to incorporate his offering and his sufferings to her in the mystery of the redemption. When she hears the woman, "Behold your son," by which the dying Jesus confides Saint John to her, and in Saint John, all humanity, it is like a new annunciation to her. A new maternity is proposed, to which she gives a new consent. But how different from the first is this new annunciation. All had been gentleness in that far-off morning at Nazareth, but now when it is a question of begetting in grace unwieldy humanity it is excruciating. All was serene in her maternal activity near Jesus, all will be labor in raising her sons of Eve to be sons of God. And it will be that way throughout time. Did Jesus appear to his mother on Easter morning? We do not know. Anyway, one thing is certain, Mary lived the Paschal mystery in her soul. The Ascension, like the Resurrection, is for her a joyful mystery. Mary returns to the Father what the Father has given to her, but she well knows that nothing can separate him from her. Mary and humanity. On the day of Pentecost the apostles and disciples are reassembled in the cenacle. The mother is in the midst of her children. Suddenly the tongues as of fire appeared, rested on them, and made them new men. Carried forth by gladness and love, they hurried to announce the marvels of God.